So the Buddha then said he's got through the first five elements with Pukkasati, and then in the sutta when I first read it, I got a bit puzzled, because he doesn't actually do the same process for the sixth element, which is consciousness. It's when you read the sutta, it sounds like he just starts giving Pukkasati a lot more of further teaching. So the first thing he says is he talks to him about mindfulness of feeling. He says, okay, I've talked about the first five elements, so there's just the sixth one left, consciousness, pure and bright. And he starts talking about, he said, well, you know, that mind, so that consciousness recognises experience as pleasant and unpleasant. So you get a whole, it sounds like it's another set of teachings, which puzzled me at the time. I thought, it's not what you do in the six element practice. You don't do that. And I puzzled me for a bit, and then I was reading it, because I did want to use it for one of these retreats. And then I thought, oh, maybe what... it sounds like the Buddha's giving him teachers. Maybe he's not doing that. Maybe he's just now, to Pukkasati, describing what a mind is like that really, really has reflected on those first five elements. Because, you know, it's your consciousness that is doing the reflecting, clearly. And so if your consciousness and mind is reflecting in that way on those elements, internalized element, not the same, not me, then that process in itself changes your mind, changes your state of consciousness. It does something to make it more pure and bright. So then I began to think, oh, really, maybe what the Buddha's doing at this point, he's describing what the mind of a person is like who has thoroughly reflected on these five elements. That's interesting, because it's not quite how we teach the six element practice. I did ask Lante on another occasion about that, and he said he didn't remember exactly what was in the sutta. But he said he thought that sounded reasonable, because it doesn't sound quite right that you just go at that stage with a person. You wouldn't just go and give him a whole more of different teaching. So he did say it does sound like that's what the Buddha's doing in it. So the first thing is he says your mind just, you know, has this experience there. It's aware of it's pleasant and unpleasant, or, you know, neutral. But along with that awareness that's present, also is present is the awareness that, independence upon a particular thing happening, this feeling has arisen that's pleasant and I'm enjoying it, or it's unpleasant and I'm not enjoying it. When that event, when whatever's given rise to it itself ceases, the feeling will cease. So everything the Buddha's describing, he's describing a mind that's aware of what's going on and enjoying what's going on if it's enjoyable, and perhaps, you know, not enjoying some things, but always aware of impermanence, always aware of it's come into being because of such and such conditions. When they change, it will also change. If they stop, this feeling will stop. So there's a continuous sort of interpenetration of awareness of what's happening, empirically what's happening, and an awareness of the conditionality of that. So he does this and goes through, and there's a whole section on dhyanas, which I'll not say anything about. But then he says, there remains only equanimity, pure and bright. So you do this kind of reflection, your mind becomes much more ongoingly, naturally. That's what they get the feeling. It's naturally aware of conditionality, of how things come into being and last for a bit and go out of being. Conditions change, things interact, different things happen. It's always, there's this flow of events. So there's this a mind that's aware of that and aware of itself being like that. Aware of itself as a flowing self. Just natural. That would be what would be natural. So that's quite a thought, because that's kind of not what we do. We cling on to things, and we don't normally have a sense of ourselves as a flowing sense, and happily a flowing sense, happily able to engage with that. And quite often our mind isn't filled with equanimity. Mine isn't, anyway. But later on the Buddha says, so, you know, then your mind is just filled with equanimity, pure and bright. And then there's this lovely metaphor, I suppose. He says, just as a goldsmith refines gold by putting it in a crucible, well, preparing a furnace first and then putting it in a crucible, the gold, and then from time to time the goldsmith blows on it a bit and sprinkles water on it and just looks. So I used to be a chemist, a long time I used to be a research chemist, and I really like that little description of, you know, preparing the furnace, and sometimes you just look at it, because it's true, it's what you do, actually, do experiments. You just go and you just look to see how it's getting on, as if you're going to help it a bit by your presence. So goldsmith is this with gold. The gold becomes malleable, refined, wieldy, faultless, rid of dross, and radiant. And whatever kind of ornament the goldsmith wished to make of it, it would serve his purpose. So too with one's mind, if you do those reflections. So too, in the mind of the person who reflects on the sixth element, there remains only equanimity, purified and bright, malleable, wieldy, faultless, and radiant. It's lovely. It's very beautiful. So going back to the story. I mentioned earlier the foundation of wisdom, the four foundations in this one. So the first one was not neglecting wisdom. So that's what the Buddha's now led Pukkasati through, a practice which will enable Pukkasati not to neglect wisdom. And when the Buddha's speaking, he's talking about these four foundations of wisdom. They're the foundations of an enlightened person, the foundations of an arahant, is how he puts it. You know, when you really thoroughly do this, you reach the stage of you know that you've destroyed the roots of suffering in yourself. You've attained that enlightened state. So that's the eventual, you know, foundation of wisdom. Then he says, having been founded on truth, it is unshakable and not deceptive. That's a foundation of truth. And a person like that, whereas formerly he acquired attachments or developed attachments, now they are abandoned and do not arise. That's the foundation of relinquishment, renunciation. Attachments don't come in and get you in their grip. Which is not to say that the enlightened person, or even the more normal or more lesser than that Buddhist practitioner, doesn't enjoy life. Of course, you know, we do. Things happen, they're enjoyable, they're pleasant. Of course we enjoy that. Just try not to grasp onto them. It's the grasping onto them that creates the I. You can't. It's the I inside, this elusive, you know, deluded sense of I that we've got, that does the grasping on. No sooner has something pleasant happened than we're going, I want it to last, or I want another one. If it's gone, okay, I want another one. If it's there and it's not pleasant, we go, I don't want it. You're immediately pushing away. So the eye making and mind making is the, you know, another way of putting that is grasper and grasped, and grasping, and that's the source of basic source of suffering. So this arahant person who's acquired, who's attained insight, whereas formerly he did that, formerly he was involved in grasping and clinging, and now that's abandoned, and that's the foundation of the relinquishment. And then covetousness, the kind of mental states that we're probably familiar with, covetousness, desire, anger, ill will, hate, ignorance, delusion, all of those are all abandoned, done away with, no longer able to arise. That's the foundation of peace. So no longer able to arise, you know, because the fundamental problem that was enabling them to arise was this view and conviction of self, the eye-making and mind-making. That's been eradicated. So covetousness, anger, ill will, all of those are no longer able to arise. That's definitely gives you the sense of the permanent state of an enlightened person has reached. That's the foundation of peace. But then there's more.